This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And I'm joined by Fiend Nikki Darling. How you doing there,
Worms?
Nikki Darling? Worms.
I am doing great for a Sunday.
Yep. And what is your Fiend's wrestling name?
Oh, it's the Freedom Master.
The Freedom Master, yeah. It's the only one that's not an animal name. And on the other end, we have young Nick. Nick, the yak farmer. What is your name, Nick?
Nick Hazelton, the Hazy Yak.
The Hazy Yak. There you go. And we're going to be chatting about some things today, some liberty-type stuff, and also just some general interest stuff, because that's the kind of show this is. Because, you know, we all know that Obama did something horrible to us today. We all know that he's a snake and a skunk, and his feet probably stink, and he's immoral. But you know what? There's 100 other places you can get that news discussed in depth. And we'll just state it up front, because I think it's almost like, isn't it required by law to say criticize the president once an hour on radio? Might be. I don't know. It's probably not. But I think if you want to stay on radio, you have to do that. But I feel it in my heart of hearts. I feel in my heart of hearts that man is immoral, unconstitutional, unconscionable, and probably incontinent. But so we're going to move on. We're going to talk about a TV show called The Wire that Nikki Darling turned me on to. Now, here's the thing. I've talked many times about I have certain criteria that are requirements for episodic media or even movies that I like. I don't really like anything that doesn't take place in, you know, pretty much my lifetime, like the last 50 years and, you know, probably 50 years in the future. I don't like anything from days of yore very much. I don't like anything that's in the far, far future. I don't like anything that has magic or wizards or, you know, fairies or purple capes. I don't really like anything that has like one man against the universe, you know, kind of BS kind of stuff like that. I generally like things that take place, you know, somewhere between like when I was born and when I'll probably die. Oh, on Earth. I don't really like things that take place in distant galaxies. I like things that take place on Earth in my probable lifetime that have no magic and have small, interesting ensemble casts. And that's for movies, episodic TV, everything. Now, the exception to that is like really fun, like cartoons. Like, okay, Futurama breaks almost all of those rules. And, you know, there's a problem with science fiction. It's not a problem, but it's there's a saying that highly advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So it's kind of hard to say what breaks the rule of I don't like magic in things, because I mean, literally, like when I was a kid, in the span of my lifetime, you know, when I was 10 and first used a computer, the first time I used a computer was what's the university in New Hampshire where begins with an H? Yeah, you know, okay, anyway, there's
Dartmouth.
Okay, it was Dartmouth. Yeah, in Hanover. That's what I'm thinking of. Oh. My sister was going there, and I went in. They sat me down at the computer lab, and I played tic-tac-toe on a dumb terminal connected to a mainframe. But back then, like, you know, computers were not something that was small and inexpensive and in your home. And if you told me, then that, you know, later in my life, not even that much later in my life, everyone would have a computer in their home that was more powerful than the mainframe I was using at that point, and we'd all be talking to each other and sharing audio and video on them. Well, I was pretty prescient and forward-thinking. I probably would have believed you, but most people would have seen that as magic. You know, the idea of, like, a telephone in your pocket. Back then, when telephones were wired and it cost, you know, it cost 35 cents to call the next county back then, let alone to call the next state or another country. You know, if you'd been told that there would be phones in everyone's pocket that could communicate with the world, it would have seemed like the, you know, sci-fi, like the communicators on Star Trek or something. Yeah. So, and the other thing is I tend to like in media is like if it's TV media, it's already done. It's got like 8 seasons. It's over and they're all up online on Netflix or something. So I can just binge watch them.
Yeah.
So, everyone who listens to this show and everyone who's a co-host on the show knows those criteria. And Nikki Darling mentioned The Wire, and I was like, what? And she's like, you haven't seen The Wire? And so I actually watched a half an episode of it a couple years ago, and just it didn't resonate. And I went back and started watching it and really looking at it, and it kind of blew my mind. It's such good TV, and it's one of these things. I have another problem I have with TV is that the government is the hero in most action TV and cop drama TV. And the government is not the hero in this show. The government is painted as completely incompetent and corrupt, which I think is far more accurate than painting it as a hero. So, Nikki, tell me a little bit about your experiences with the TV show The Wire. Now, you live in Maryland. This takes place in Baltimore. You've been to Baltimore a lot. You've worked in Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the show, my experience with it, I was actually late to watch it also. Like, I had someone else on my end being like, have you seen The Wire? No, you have to watch it. So, I know how you feel. So, when I finally watched it, I watched it over 3 weeks, and I had a laptop next to a giant 27-inch screen, and I was doing work on the big screen and watching it on the laptop.
Yeah, that's how I consume media a lot, except I do it on the same big screen and have to move windows around.
That's annoying.
Yeah. So the TV show, if you haven't seen it, it's, I mean, when I suggested it to somebody the other day, they were like, oh, isn't that a cop drama? And I'm like, it's a cop, you know, it's a typical cop drama in the same way that, like, you know, Ron Paul is a typical politician or something, yeah. or that the Freedom Fiends are a typical radio show. Yeah, it's a drama and there are cops in it, but it is not a typical cop drama. It kind of shows a lot of the intersections between government, the community, the drug dealers, the police, the newspapers, and the entrenched system of the drug war and just how immoral it is. But everyone's kind of morally ambiguous in this. I think that's another aspect of shows that I like is characters are likable but morally ambiguous. And what I mean by that is, like, they're not clear-cut good guys or bad guys. Which I kind of feel is accurate too of humanity. And I guess, you know, some people would probably disagree with that, especially religious people probably believe that people are either good or bad. But no, I mean, you know, smart religious people understand that, you know, if people have free will and God gave you free will, you're free to make your own horrible decisions. And, you know, everyone who's ever done something horrible has probably done some good things in their lives. And everyone who's basically a good person is probably has some horrible secrets of things they've done in their lives. Except for me. I'm good. No, okay. I'm joking. When I used to joke to my mother, I'm perfect. And she would lightly grab my wrist and, like, pretend like she's looking for nail holes and say, nope. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Nick, have you had a chance to see any of this yet?
No, I saw a few clips. It looks good.
Yeah. Yep. It's so Nikki, I was watching this and it had a real vibe that looked familiar to me before. Well, first of all, I've seen all of Treme, which is a show by the same creator done after. And it's kind of a similar show that takes place in New Orleans, but it's a lot more about the city of New Orleans and recovering from, you know, just the problems in hell of recovering from Katrina.
Yeah.
And also, The Wire is Barack Obama has said it's his favorite TV show. And I really don't know if I believe that. I don't know if he watches TV. I don't know if he has time to. I don't think he'd like this show because it makes the government look completely incompetent. And I think he believes that the government is the savior of the universe, especially when Democrats are in charge and Democrats are in charge in this universe of Baltimore where things are falling apart. But I think Barack Obama is just a racist who likes to see young black men thrown into prison. And there's a lot of that in here. So if he likes that movie, I think it's just because he likes to see people thrown into cages and beat up by cops. And there's a lot of that in this show, too. But the show reminds me of a couple things. One is Clockers, which is a movie that came before it based on a book by Richard Price. And the other is the book Clockers by Richard Price. The characters and scenarios reminded me a lot of that, and kind of the vibe reminded me of that. But it also reminded me of Last Exit to Brooklyn, the Hubert Selby Jr. book that takes place in the 50s in a bad neighborhood in Brooklyn. And I watched a couple seasons of this and kept thinking this. And then I was like, I didn't go look it up or anything. I just kept thinking, man, whoever created this has read Last Exit to Brooklyn and read Clockers. And then I was like, wait, that's Richard Price, the author of Clockers, doing a cameo as the English teacher in the prison. And, you know, they're discussing the Great Gatsby with these gangsters. And I'm like, I know that's him. I know it's him because he's in my movie, Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow. He's one of the interviewees in it. And he was a huge fan of Selby and very influenced by Selby. And then I looked it up, and it's like The Wire is based on the book Clockers, and Richard Price co-wrote like 6 episodes of The Wire, and he worked with David Simon creating the series. I just nailed it. I nailed it, and I was like, yep, I know my late 20th century American literature. Yay.
Yeah, nice. I mean, it also kind of reminds me of it has a little documentary feel to it as well, which I like.
Yeah, that's a lot of cop shows kind of have that now, and I think it's influenced by the TV show Cops, actually. I actually read that somewhere.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, it was kind of, it's not unique to that. I mean, the show Dragnet from the late 50s and early 60s and mid 60s and late 60s, long-running cop TV show, which was actually the first kind of police procedural where it showed, like, what cops supposedly do in their day. You know, it doesn't show them beating people up, but it shows mm-hmm. what they do when they're not beating people up. Dragnet had a documentary feel to it. You know, it had voiceover and narration by the people in it. And it felt like that. So tell me a little bit more about your reflections, Nikki, of the show The Wire and your thoughts about it.
Well, I did notice about the show that each season kind of has a theme to it. You know, like, I think there's the music.
Let's finish it up real quick.
Okay. Well, season 2, I think, was all about schools, right?
Schools and the ports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was pretty interesting with the politics there.
Yeah. Each episode's compartmentalized, each season's compartmentalized, and the whole thing works as a piece. I like that too.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair or Libertarian Paradise and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit FreeStateWyoming.org.
Freedom Fiends, we're yakking about the TV show The Wire. And Nikki Darling, tell me a story about Baltimore, where The Wire takes place.
Baltimore used to be a really rough city, like in the early 90s and throughout the 80s. Canton and the areas along the water were kind of considered like the heroin den of the East. A lot of the heroin came into Baltimore. So heroin is probably still a big thing in Baltimore. I don't know because I don't do drugs, but
let me interject there. That's one of the things in the show The Wire is like every season or even every half season, the heroin dealers change the name of their product. And they're out there yelling, and it's always like toe tag or DOA or WMD or Bin Laden. They always have these scary names. And there's one that's really funny that's kind of subtle is, horse is a name for heroin. And a dark horse candidate is one who no one thinks is going to win and then wins. There is a dark horse candidate white guy running in an almost all black city against the black mayor incumbent, who actually wins. So he's totally the dark horse. And like the day after he wins, the dealers are out selling heroin called Dark Horse. Come get your Dark Horse. That's subtle and that's funny, man. It's kind of the kind of subtle writing that I like in this show.
Yeah, but, and you have to admit that these guys are very entrepreneurial. Like, it's business, and it's you see a lot of that in this TV show.
Well, you know, if you took away the murders and the aggression, drug dealers, you know, inner city drug dealers would be the perfect libertarians because they're entrepreneurial, they're capitalists, they understand the free market. And they like gold and guns. They're just like us, except they kill people.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate part. There is a lot of murder in this show, if you're sensitive.
And they do drugs. But, you know, the murder in the show is not incredibly graphic.
Yeah.
Which is, I like, too, because I don't really see a need for that. And except in, like, I like CSI a lot. There's a lot of graphic things in there, too. You know, I heard this comedian talking about, like, you know, I go to movies with my girlfriends and like we'll go see an old Western and, you know, she'll be like, I don't like all this violence. And he's like, what violence? You know, there's like guys shooting each other and then looking like cartoon characters and there's no blood. And he's like, you got me. And then she'll be like eating lasagna and watching CSI like with rapt attention and be like, and yes, we are pulling the brain out of the screen.
Yeah. I like that kind of stuff. Call me more, but I used to want to work at the coroner's office. I got some funny stories about dating a guy in the coroner's office. But anyway, so in The Wire, you wanted that one season about Hamsterdam?
Yeah, I want to talk about Hamsterdam. Yeah. There is a, you know, so a lot of this is based on truth and based on actually how things are in the inner cities and how cops treat people, which is basically like, here's what the war on drugs has done. And here's why you should care, listeners. You should listen, America, even if you don't like drugs and hate drug dealers and don't want them in your neighborhood. I don't want them in my neighborhood. And I don't do drugs, but I believe in my heart of hearts that the war on drugs leads to the war on everything, and there's no way to compartmentalize it. And if you are a gun owner, you should be against the war on drugs because the war on drugs fuels the war on guns. If you believe in privacy, if you believe in freedom of religion, all of that stuff is in danger as long as drugs are outlawed and dealt with like an invading enemy force. And if drugs were legal, there would be less of them and they'd be less pure. I mean, really, like the war on drugs has driven up the purity and the availability because without these massive artificially inflated prices that you have from them being illegal, where the dealers are basically they're not selling the drugs. The drugs cost like 7 cents a dose to make. You know, the reason they cost, you know, $7 or $70, you know, for a few doses to buy is because you're paying the dealer for taking the risk of prison and death to sell them, of being shot by the police. The war on drugs like leads to cops being able to pull you over, search your car, take your money if you can't account for it. And the main thing that the war on drugs has changed is the attitude of the police versus the civilian. And if you don't understand that police regularly violate people's constitutional rights, rough them up completely. People are completely innocent of any crime and people have done things that are illegal that have no victim. Google, you know, cop beats up blank, whatever. It'll on YouTube, you'll get 100 videos. But when I was a kid, there was not this adversarial relationship with the cops where they looked at everybody as an enemy that wants to kill them, and then therefore they want to kill you. That has happened in my lifetime, the last 50 years, because of the war on drugs. So we'll talk about Hamsterdam and The Wire when we get back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pine Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to MIPLC.org.
What sets Survival Punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival Punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival Punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com. It's Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and we are talking about all things Baltimore and the show The Wire. I have a story about Baltimore. This is my first ever impression of Baltimore. Okay, when I grew up in upstate New York, western New York, as far away from New York City as you can be. And like 2 weeks after my 18th birthday, I left home. I was just like, I'm out of here. My parents were not abusive. It was nothing like that. It was like, I had worlds to conquer. You know, I'd been in this little town trying to communicate with the outside world before the internet. I was done with it. I was going to go see the world. So, I left, hitched a ride with a friend of mine who lived in DC. Actually went, this is kind of funny. I went and lived in Chevy Chase, Maryland in a millionaire's mansion. My friend was his dad was a corporate attorney who sued the US government a lot and was rich. And I lived in his house in Chevy Chase, Maryland. You know, Chevy Chase, Maryland, right?
Of course.
Yeah. And I lived there until his dad came back from at the end of the summer and threw me out. And then I went and lived in an abandoned factory down by the Key Bridge in Georgetown, D.C. So I went from living in a mansion with my buddy. He was like 19. He was 17. I was 18. So I lived in the mansion for about a month and then went and lived in an abandoned factory, but had a job like where I had to wear a tie. I was working in a restaurant called Naturally Yours. It was a health food restaurant. They still have one. It's in, it's by DuPont Circle. They had one in Georgetown though. I mean, I don't think they have one in Georgetown anymore. So I would like wake up in the morning, stumble out. I had an alarm clock in this abandoned factory and I'd wake up using my backpack as a pillow. The nights that rats wouldn't try to gnaw through the pillow because I had some food in there that leftover food from the restaurant. That did happen. And I would like stumble out and put on my tie looking in the rearview mirror of a parked car and then go to work.
Nice.
I lived there for 3 years. No, I lived there for about 9 months. And then I moved for 2.5 years down to Charlottesville, Virginia. And then I decided I needed to move to a big city and try to make it as a musician. And my plan was I was going to move to either New York or San Francisco or L.A. and play music until everyone in that town who liked weird music had heard of me. And if they liked it, I was going to keep doing it. And if they did not like it, I was going to sell my musical equipment and buy a typewriter and be a writer. That was my other plan. And I've since done both. And like, you know, I went to San Francisco and started the band Bomb and got signed to Warner Brothers and toured the world. And then got a drug habit. And then the band broke up because of my drug habit. And then I kept my music, sold my musical equipment for drugs, got clean when I was 30 and went back to college. Took some English classes, typing classes, computer classes, and then started to make a living as a writer. So everything I say I'm going to do, I'm going to do. When I was 11, I said someday I'm going to be on the radio. And I'm going down my bucket list here. So when I decided to move, I decided to move to San Francisco. I didn't want to move to New York City because it was too close of a bus ride that I could go home if it didn't work out. I wanted to be far away, so I couldn't go home easily. So I went to San Francisco. I bought a one-way Greyhound bus ticket from Charlottesville to San Francisco for $99. And let's just say this is before I was 20 years sober. It's before I was 20 minutes sober, and I decided to have a little something in me to make the trip a little more interesting. And I left in the middle of the night from Charlottesville, and it took about 2.5 hours for the bus to get to DC. It's still the middle of the night, and by then, like the little something, my brain was streaming. I was just like, to the point where like when the bus stopped, it felt like it was still moving. And I don't recommend this for anybody. Don't do this. Don't do drugs, kids. Stay in school and brush your teeth. So
we got to DC and I was like, man, this is like some bad neighborhoods here. I was looking out the window going, this is kind of scary. So we get back on the bus and we drive to like the other side of town. Like it, I thought it took like 10 minutes, but it was really like 45 or 60 minutes. And then I was like, that side of town, I was like, there was another bus stop in DC. And I was like, man, this part of DC is really scary. And then I realized it wasn't DC, it was Baltimore. That was my first ever impression of Baltimore, man. I thought it was like the worst neighborhood in DC.
Yes, people, if you go to Baltimore, stay in the harbor or Hampton. Don't go anywhere else.
Yes, eat some crabs down by the pier.
Down there by the pier.
Yep. So Hamsterdam. This is kind of funny because hamsters are kind of the spirit animal of the Freedom Fiends radio show because we have a lot of bumpers that say for the nighttime show that's Monday through Friday, we say, and if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please tune in. You know, hamster in your brain is kind of an analogy. I didn't make it up. It's a thing people say for, you know, when you're lying in bed worrying and your thoughts are spinning over and over and over, or worrying or just thinking a lot. It's kind of like a hamster running on a rusty wheel in your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was really happy to see Hamsterdam as a thing in this show. There's a police commissioner or high level police, as they say. I like how they say that. Like, I'm a police. Like, even the white cops say that in this show. A high level police says, and I know that's Ebonics and it's improper English, but the cops say that in there. They're like, yeah, man, I'm a good police. I've always been a police.
Yeah,
my daddy was a police. So the war on drugs is a game of whack-a-mole. It's basically, you know, they crack down hard. They want to impress the voters who are scared to death to leave their home. So they go out and send a bunch of cops out to beat up a bunch of kids and throw them in jail and ruin their life for practicing free trade. And, you know, to voluntary customers who don't need to be protected from themselves, because that's, if you believe in small government and personal responsibility taken to the nth degree, that basically means anything should be legal if someone doesn't get forced to buy it. The government is immoral because it forces you to buy things like Obamacare. Crack cocaine will kill you dead. But it's moral. There's nothing immoral about selling it if you're not murdering people or forcing them. And it's like, the thing about drugs is they are something that require no advertising campaign. You know, it's like someone goes out on a corner and the fiends show up, the drug addicts show up. And fiend means fiend. And this show is the Freedom Fiends. We're not the Freedom Drug Addicts. We're the Freedom Fiends, but it's spelled, we say it fiend like they would on the wire. So basically this police commissioner in the show decides to basically legalize drugs in three sections of the city in this show as an experiment to see what'll happen. He takes these three, like, you know, four square block neighborhoods that are totally abandoned buildings, have nobody living there, sends his cops out to tell all the drug dealers, you know, show them a map and say, you go sell drugs here, we won't bother you. You sell drugs anywhere else, we're going to crack down hard. And it takes them a few days of getting beat up by the police and arrested to finally realize it. And they go to these three neighborhoods and the drug dealers are still like, we don't want to do that. What are you talking about? And they're like, well, you know, it'll be like Amsterdam. And then one of the, you know, the kid says, what's Amsterdam? And one of the dumb cops says, it's one of them countries where drugs are legal. It's not really a country. It's a city. But he says, it's one of them countries. Amsterdam's one of them countries where drugs are legal. And the kid says, I don't want to go to no Hamsterdam. It's like the kid either misheard it or was just making fun of it. And that name kind of sticks. Like the cops think that's funny and they start calling these legal drug zones Hamsterdam. And it, even to the point where, like, that's what it's being called in the newspaper and by the mayor. And when basically what happens, and this is what would happen, is crime goes down in the neighborhoods where people were selling drugs. Citizens can finally come back out and walk down the street without being afraid of being murdered, or, you know, without having to hear hip hop music and without having to hear people yelling and have people shooting each other on their block. You know, it changes the scape of the city for the better. And the unfortunate thing is the cop who does this ends up getting demoted and then fired. Like, you know, he goes from like captain to lieutenant or something, you know, gets a cut in pay, doesn't get as much of his pension, basically gets punished for fixing things.
Yeah.
Because, and really this is what would happen. And you kind of see this happening even with just marijuana decriminalization, not with just drugs legal in one part of the town. you know, I mean, everyone's just appalled. Like the other police commissioners, the other cops, the mayor, the press, the public are just like appalled. Like, how can you do that? You know, and the weird thing is, you know, they say the definition of insanity is trying the same things over and expecting different results. That's what's happened with the drug war since the prohibition on alcohol ended and the war on drugs started with the outlawing of marijuana or the taxation of marijuana to where they wouldn't issue any tax stamps. So that's kind of what the world is dealing with. And I kind of want off this planet because it's like, you know, it's like the world has cancer. Someone comes up with a cure and people say, we don't like that cure. We want to beat people up instead, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying the decrim in D.C., and I'm not sure how well that's going to go, but it's better than nothing because one of the council members finally came out and said, you know, we have a disparity between black and white people being jailed for marijuana use for victimless crimes, and he finally got it passed, Tommy Wells. So that's a good thing for D.C. We'll see how it works out because it's still illegal to use it and it's still illegal to buy it, but it's not illegal to have a small personal amount.
Well, that's why I say Barack Obama is a racist because he promised to end crackdowns on marijuana, and he promised to, that was a campaign promise. And then like
what?
When he was elected, there was a town hall meeting and he was asked, you know, by someone in the audience, are you going to, you know, make good on your promise? And he said, oh, I don't think we'll be doing that. That's an exact quote. He laughed at a voter who voted for him for a promise, and he laughed at the idea of fulfilling the promise. And he's actually cracked down on drug trades and legal marijuana dispensaries far more than George Bush. So, and the war on drugs does disproportionately target black people. Based on, you know, percentages of people who actually use drugs versus people who are actually prosecuted and the severity of the prosecutions. So that's why I say Barack Obama is a racist who hates young black men and wants to see them in jail.
Yeah.
So, Nick, you had something about the unintended consequence of the decriminalization of marijuana.
Did I?
Yeah. Yeah. You
oh,
sent it
man,
to me.
Bad radio. I forgot.
Let me find it.
Oh, yes.
Why don't you read a little bit about
this? I remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. It's basically that police chief, you know, they're pointing out like some of the interesting effects of the decriminalization of marijuana. You got it there? All right, let's move on to something else. So, okay, here it is. Capitalism is freedom. Selling weed to minors is police conducted a sting operation on marijuana dispensaries. They were shocked by what they found. They found nothing, or rather, nothing illegal going on. Yeah, and the thing is, yeah, okay. The fact that police forces weren't able to find a single dispensary to sell to underage buyers speaks volumes about the legitimacy of Colorado's weed economy.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When I found the Free State Project, I knew it was the key to achieving liberty in my lifetime. It's awesome to be surrounded by like-minded, freedom-loving activists who've moved here to New Hampshire. From politics to civil disobedience, we have it all. Where I came from, it felt that no matter what I did, liberty was dying. Perhaps you feel the same way? Call 888-377-2515 now to learn more about the Free State Project. That's 888-377-2515 or visit freestateproject.org.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends, live talk musical radio.
Meow.
Meow. You know what I found out the other day? We got thrown off a station, or like not renewed on a station, for that show that Nima and I did where we did nothing but play music one day. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and it was, you know, we'll never do that again. It was just, you know, we were having a party. We were celebrating the release of some software. And we are looking for software programmers. If you are a young software or an old software programmer and want to change the world, we're a middle-aged software programmer, and do something for freedom for free. That's going to be intense work for not a long time until it's done, and then we're going to release it. It's nothing illegal. It's not, you know, we're not tapping the NSA or anything. We're not doing to the government what the government does to us. No, we're just trying to make something for connect. It's basically a Skype replacement that's better for point-to-point that's for radio. Write me at talkback@freedomfiendsfoxtrotechoechonovembersierra.com. So kind of blew it on that last bit there, and this is a teaching hospital, so I'm going to explain it. They say you should never point out your mistakes on radio, but on the Freedom Fiends, we always point out our mistakes on the radio because we're trying to teach the next generation of Liberty Media people. And here's what I did wrong. I threw to Nick. Throwing to somebody means like, and what say you, Nick? Or what do you think about that? Or tell us about that, Nikki, or whatever. You know, you throw to the other person and they have something ready and then they go right into it. Kind of like you're throwing a ball back and forth in a ball game. And I did not check to see that Nick had the thing ready to go. It's something he sent me yesterday on email and said, yeah, this could be a show topic. And so I just assumed he'd have it and just threw to him.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think we lost him again. So Nikki, what say you, Nikki?
Well, overnight it seems that DC has ruled the ban on open carry unconstitutional, or at least one judge did.
Open carry of sidearms, of handguns, yeah.
Yes, handguns. So, yeah, probably wouldn't have helped Adam Kokesh, but still. This looks like a joke to me because I can only find a few articles about it. I saw something pop up on Facebeef about it, but yeah. Apparently it says it's immediately suspended and residents and non-residents alike are allowed to carry pistols outside of their homes.
Without a permit, openly carried.
Yeah, supposedly, but I'm going to have to look into this more, maybe call some official offices.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a thing that happens sometimes is I usually check sources on things, and I don't trust the mainstream media, but I trust even less sometimes the wingnut media, you know, the like,
yeah,
the right wing, we're all gonna die if you don't buy colloidal uranium enemas, you know, kind of like blogs where they only ever cover tyranny and they have things like Obama's gonna steal all your money July 1st, click here, and then you click there and it's like, you know, for $400 we'll sell you this DVD series on what he's going to do and how to protect yourself. Like, they don't even tell you what it is.
Yeah.
It's that kind of ads, and lots of Viagra ads, and lots of anyway, so when I see a headline, it sounds too nutty to be true. First of all, I look to make sure it's not The Onion or something like The Onion. You know, they used to say, is it Live or is it Memorex? And now I think the thing is, someone said, you know, is it The Onion or is it real? The Onion is a fake news site that is so convincing. It's actually been reprinted by real news sites as fake. But I'm actually looking here. I searched this headline, Court Strikes Down DC's Ban on Carrying Handguns in Public. It was on the Daily Caller, which is one of those sites I don't trust to be accurate.
Me either.
And it's also on NBC News.
Okay.
Which, you know, NBC is like the right arm of the tyranny state. You know, they lie to you all the time. They don't tell the truth. But if it's on there, it probably is something that actually happened. Maybe. I don't know, man.
It said this happened literally overnight. And at the end of the article, the one thing that I really don't like, it says, what do you think about gun control laws in Washington, D.C. being ruled as unconstitutional? And then it says, do you think President Obama may respond with an executive order?
I found the CBS local picture, and the picture they showed is like a gangbanger on the corner with a pistol like stuck in his pants without a holster.
Oh, my God.
All right. Yeah. Maybe they just want to scare people. I don't know. You know, scare people by legalizing carry of guns for days. The thing is, like, most of those guys are felons and couldn't legally carry a gun anyway. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I like what the dealers do in The Wire. They don't keep the gun on them. They keep it, like, nearby in the bushes.
Yeah, in a bag.
Yep. Yeah, we'll be back with hour two. Try to get Nick back on the Freedom Fiends. He's been droned. We're going to go undrone him. Press the drone delete button to bring him back. All right.
Worms.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bathroom.
No, from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And we got, on the other end of the inner tubes, we got Ms. Nikki Darling. Are you there, Nikki?
Yes, worms.
From Mordor. Where are you at?
Near Mordor on the Potomac.
Which is Washington, D.C. Yeah, it's the evil empire on the D.C. Built on a swamp, and it still smells like it from the stink of politics. And then we got young Nick, the yak farmer over there in the majestic Pacific Northwest. How are you, Nick?
I'm doing good.
You're doing good?
How are you guys?
No, you're doing well. Superman does good.
Yeah, I'm great. Oh, yeah. That's what I learned in public school.
Yeah. Yep. So we're talking about the fact that statists and control freaks and Democrats and conservatives and liberals all want to keep drugs. Most of them want to keep drugs illegal because there's so much money and so much power in being able to keep drugs illegal. And the ironic thing to me is people, you know, you'll hear people talking about, like, we need a free market. We need people to take personal responsibility. We don't want the government to tell us what to do with our health. If you believe all those things, you should be against the war on drugs. You should also be against the war on drugs if you like personal freedom for guns or keeping your own money or not having your car searched or not having your home searched. Because there's no way to compartmentalize that. You can't give the government ultimate power to regulate something unconstitutionally that there's no reason to do for the public good, as they say, and violate free markets and still say you're in favor of free markets and the government shouldn't be able to regulate your health. I don't take drugs. None of us take drugs. We, we're people that don't do drugs, but we're in favor of legalizing all drugs tomorrow because, if you're against big government, you got to be against war on drugs. You can't make exceptions. You have to be consistent. So we were talking about this movie, this TV show, The Wire, that has a scene in it where, or a series of scenes in it where a police chief in Baltimore legalizes crack and all drugs in three abandoned four-block areas of the city. And crime goes down the rest of the city. People can walk the streets again. People aren't shooting each other on their doorstep. People aren't hanging out on their doorstep. Now, they call this Hamsterdam in the show because someone misunderstands the word Amsterdam. And I think it's kind of funny because we like hamsters. So, but talk a little bit, Nikki, about what Hamsterdam looks like in this TV show and how it probably really would look in real life.
Well, it probably back then, there really are blocks in Baltimore that look like that, but it totally looks like it was obliterated by a bomb, perhaps, like Camden, New Jersey. It looks like Camden, New Jersey, if you've ever been there. Really bad, bricks everywhere, boarded up windows, people sitting on stoops that look that are cracked. Like,
well, no,
fall
that's
off.
that's what the neighborhood that they make the Hamsterdam in looks like.
Yeah.
Before they say you got to go sell drugs there instead of everywhere else. No, I'm talking about how it looks like a it's really noisy is basically what,
yes,
I'm saying.
It's,
you know,
like a party, pretty much.
It's like a party 24/7, but louder than any party you've ever been to and blocks wide. It's you know, they say, people who say, well, if you don't love the government, move to Somalia. It kind of reminds me of Somalia, except there's no violence in it because because there's the, you know, it's legal in that point. And there's actually police begrudgingly assigned to, like, protect the dealers from each other. They hate that. They're like, this isn't what I signed up for. Although in a free market, in a true libertarian paradise, you probably would hire private security guards to protect your legal drug trade. Here's the thing is, like, as I get older, I like peace and quiet. I like not having noisy neighbors. I like not having, and I do live in a pretty peaceful neighborhood, but, libertarian paradise, a lack of government, would probably be a lot noisier than what we have now in certain places, but it would be worth it to me. And the thing is, I really believe that's how it would work too. Like, you know, people say, well, if drugs were legal, my neighborhood would go to hell. No, it wouldn't. There would probably be designated neighborhoods where private property owners would say, I can make a whole lot of money by allowing this here. Kind of the same way that, like, you know, the strip club in your town, wherever you live, is probably on the other side of the tracks, you know, yep, out near where it gets into farmland. Yeah, it wouldn't be on every street. People wouldn't tolerate it. But it wouldn't just be a matter of people not tolerating it. It was like it would be encouraged to go places that there wouldn't be interference from people complaining about it. So
yeah, exactly. And as far as private security, in Denver, I know that the private security industry is booming there because now the dispensaries all have private security. Because of the banking laws, they're not allowed to accept anything but cash at dispensaries. So they're dealing with huge volumes of cash on a daily basis,
wow,
that have to be driven to banks.
Wow. I didn't know, yeah, that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I also, the thing is too, like the governments, state, local, and federal, are doing everything they can to mess with the free market of decriminalized and legal marijuana because, you know, they're doing things like they won't insure some of these people. They won't allow, you know, like, yep, some bonded security or, you know, money carrying operations that work with quote unquote legitimate businesses to work with them. So basically, you know, they're saying, well, we're going to let you make all this money. We're going to take all of it by a lot of it by taxation and regulation. But you're going to still be a sitting duck for armed, you know, highwaymen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, Nick, did you have anything on this?
Yeah, I think that it's great that they're legalizing these things. And I do think it would be better if the free market handled it on its own, just because natural rights. People have the right to do what they want and sell what they want. And it's, the government has no place telling people what they can and cannot do.
Do you find it ironic that there are a lot of people who talk for smaller government and talk about natural rights and things like states' rights and, you know, they want Obama out of their business and out of their health care, but then they still want drugs illegal. Do you find that ironic?
I find it completely ironic.
Why?
Because if you have the right to carry firearms or have the right to make your own decisions, then you have the right to make your own decision to ingest or possess anything that, yeah, does not harm another person.
Yeah, and you don't do drugs. The thing is, a lot of people believe, a lot of square people believe that if you're in favor of legalizing drugs, it's just because you use drugs and want to get away with smoking your pots. You know, we don't do drugs, and we are still adamantly in favor of legalizing them because you have to be consistent. Freedom is not, you know, there's not compartmentalized freedom. You can't be half free. You can't claim to be free market in one thing and not be free market in another thing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, 50% of the country already smokes weed, so.
Is it that high?
Yeah.
Now, is that regular smokers or have tried it?
Or have tried it, yeah. But, I mean, there are probably 10 people on my block that I live on that secretly do it once in a while on the weekends, you know? And nobody's hurting anybody. No one's shooting anybody.
Yeah, it's safer than alcohol and tobacco. And, you know, you can lay these facts on people who are still want to keep everything illegal. You can lay all these facts at their feet, you know, with studies, with research, with pie charts, with examples, with interviews, and they still want to keep it illegal. You know, a good example was Romney, like when he was campaigning, some guy with some chronic illness in a wheelchair wheeled his way up to Romney and asked him on camera, you know, do you think I should be able to get for medical marijuana, not even just legal recreational marijuana, but medical marijuana? And Romney said no. Like, yep. What kind of twisted sociopathic, I am the king, I can make decisions for everybody thinking is that, you know, to where someone who's legitimately extremely ill, who gets relief from something, you know, and some politician who has no medical experience says, yeah, you shouldn't be able to do that. That's immoral, man.
Yeah, and it's just political pandering anyway. I mean, they just want to get the votes from the religious right.
Well, it's not necessarily the religious right. There's a lot of people who are not religious who are still pro-war on drugs. You know, and really, it I don't understand it, and it's based on bad information that's been passed down from generation to generation and generally passed down from the police industrial complex, the people who like to be able to beat people up, the jobs program of prison creation, the falseness of politicians saying, I'm going to get tough on crime. And they don't really get tough on crime. They get tough on things that are illegal that don't have a victim, because it's a lot easier to bust somebody for selling a bag of weed than it is to take down a real criminal element, you know, something that's violent, or even something like, you know, stealing cars or anything like that. It's a shell game.
Well, but that's what they do, is they turn over the little people to become like informants to try to catch the big people. And then these small time informants sometimes end up getting shot. I just saw a story about a teenager who got caught with a little bit of marijuana. They used her as an informant. They put a wire on her and the people shot her and killed her.
Yeah, that's a common thing. Actually, that's how the dark horse candidate in The Wire gets elected. He exposes the fact. Well, it's not even a fact, it turns out, but somebody who was being asked by the city to testify and promised protection was not protected and was killed. And that happens all the time. And people should read that book, Rats, even if you're not doing anything illegal. These days, you know, even criticizing the government, they will try to infiltrate you and demonize you and arrest you, you know, because they'd rather go after non-crimes than real crimes, or thought crimes than real crimes. You should read that book, Rats. It's rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com. It's a free PDF ebook on how to spot infiltrators in your organization. And, you know, more and more, that's what they do, is they don't go after the people that are shooting each other. They go after the people that have the gun, you know, the peaceful gun owners who have like one too many rounds in their mag or something like that.
Well, they need to do something to keep bringing in the money to justify their jobs.
Yeah. So are we going to shift into some more gun talk here?
Yes.
Yeah, about Detroit?
Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
All right, so in Detroit, it seems that crime has actually gone down. Violent crime, because of maybe some trigger-happy Detroiters, is what this police chief is saying. But he's saying
not
that
trigger-happy, like people who own guns for self-defense. That's not trigger-happy.
Well, he said itchy trigger fingers. But I'm just quoting him.
Okay.
And so he's saying, but that criminals are getting the message. Recently, I guess a senior was robbed and beaten up, and he fired at some reporters, and now crime seems to be going down, that people are arming themselves since they don't have a police force to protect them.
We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. download, and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com
and click on the torrent
link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com
and click on the torrent link
and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. So much truth, it hurts. And we're discussing guns. Friend or foe? I say friend. And we're going to throw to our news bunny here, Nikki Darling. Nikki Darling. And she's going to tell us about what's going on in Detroit.
Yeah, well, the article is Detroit Police Chief gives credit to armed citizens for drop in crime. And the latest incident, it says an 88-year-old was beaten and robbed inside of his East Side home last week, probably thought to be defending himself against attackers, when he opened fire Monday on a television news crew. Now, that paragraph is a little wonky, but I'll read the next one. On Thursday, a woman appeared on his front porch asking for help, and when he opened the door, two men rushed in, assaulted him, tied him up with a phone cord after robbing him of several items. So later in the week, a reporter from Channel 2 knocked on the man's door, conducted a short interview, and although the man's name was not released, he would not open the door. After the crew from the Channel 7 came into the man's porch, he fired a single shot. No one was hurt, but the bullet lodged in the tree. So it's thought that the guy was traumatized from the earlier burglary. So when a second reporter went to his porch, he may have thought that he was the woman who had tried to trick him in the first place and was just defending himself.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate incident. First of all, I wouldn't let anyone I didn't know into my home if they were outside claiming to be injured. I can look through the... First of all, I answer the door, you know, with a gun on me, which is not to say I'm pointing it at whoever's, you know, behind the door, but I check to see who's behind the door. And if somebody said, help me, I've been hurt, I would call 911. Is that your dog?
Yeah,
is that a
sorry.
Dog noise? That's okay, man. Animal noises are okay. Pets are okay. Farm animals are okay. Yaks are okay on the Freedom Fiends. It's part of the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it says here, Detroit has experienced 37% fewer robberies in 2014 than during the same period last year, with 22% fewer break-ins of businesses and homes and 30% fewer carjackings. Craig, the chief, attributed the drop to better police work and criminals being reluctant to prey on citizens who may be carrying guns.
Better police work. Isn't this the place where it takes like an hour and a half for the police to show up?
Yes, yeah, so he may have just been pumping himself up.
He was getting in front of the parade. Yeah. I think there's a lot of possible factors here. I think one is probably, since a lot of people with jobs have moved out and taking their stuff worth stealing with them, I think probably some of the criminals have moved out, moved on to greener pastures to wreck.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, there's you know, systems of large amounts of humans interacting are so complicated, it's really hard to nail things down to cause and effect. And everybody tries, to the point where two conflicting sides will take the same data set and give completely different results with it. I do believe that citizen ownership of guns does cut down on violent crime and on burglaries. You know, you look at the places that have the highest crime rates, you know, it's cities like Chicago, San Francisco, you know, LA, New York, places where it's more difficult to own a gun. And it's definitely impossible or nearly impossible to carry a gun unless you're, you know, in LA, you can get a gun permit, carry permit. If you're, oh, I don't know, a judge or a diamond merchant or a movie star. And in New York City, you can get a, you know, gun permit if you're, you know, a movie star. Robert De Niro has a gun carry permit for New York City. And he's anti-gun. He doesn't want people to be able to own guns, but he owns a gun and carries a gun. You know, Dianne Feinstein, very anti-gun, had one of 10 concealed carry permits in San Francisco when she was mayor there. Of course, you know, she called up, she probably like went out to lunch with whoever issues them, the sheriff or whoever, and said, issue me one. So, you know,
well,
they're the only ones. They're the only ones that are professional enough to have protection.
Yeah, that's really hypocritical.
Yep. Yep. So you got more on this?
Yeah, he says criminals are getting the message that good Detroiters are armed and will use that weapon. He's also reportedly said that he believes armed citizens deter crime. And he said, I don't want to take away from the good work of our investigators, but I think part of the drop in crime and robberies in particular is because criminals are thinking twice that citizens could be armed. And I have to say that New Hampshire is probably a lot like that, too.
Yeah, Detroit's not hard to get a concealed carry permit, though, so it's kind of like there's other factors at play there with the fact that it has a high crime rate. It's probably, I blame the unions, man, and the kleptocracy of decades that have taken it from a rich city to a horrible war zone, poor city.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Shiny badges on your jacket, shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Jeep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $5
for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends, this is Michael Dean, broadcasting from, oh, you know what kind of a bunker is. It is. It's windowless. It's actually not. It's a house, and it's got windows, and it's a nice, comfy room that I've sort of sound conditioned. So we're talking about a lot of stuff. We're talking about, you know, mainly governments and how horrible they are, and all governments, all politicians. They're all liars, people. Don't you get it? There's only been one honest politician in the history of America, and it was Ron Paul. And the Republican Party changed their rules to make sure no one like him could ever get a chance again.
Yeah.
And I think they're kind of freaking out that his son, who isn't even as liberty minded as he is trying to be president. They're going to keep that from happening. Or maybe they'll just, you know, let the quote unquote libertarian win and blame the collapse of, you know, 200 years of mismanagement of other people's money on that guy. They'll do that. We were talking earlier about DC apparently striking down a law banning people from open carrying guns. I'm interested to see how this plays out, because there's a lot of places where open carry of a pistol is technically legal, but the cops will still throw you to the ground and put a gun to your head and take your gun and put you in jail and make you hire a lawyer and fight to get your gun back and not go to jail. Or they'll do things like they'll arrest you for, you know, creating a public disturbance. There's all these laws on the book that don't protect anybody and are selectively enforced to punish people that the police and the government don't like. And the police are the enforcement arms of the government. They are nothing more. And without the threat of a cop pointing a gun to your head, laws are merely suggestions. So we're going to talk about Detroit and how the police chief there says that armed citizenry and good police work is making a reduction in crime there. I would say it's probably just the armed citizenry, because what's the good police work? What do the police do there? They show up, you know, after you're murdered.
Yep.
They show up after you're murdered and take pictures of you. They take really, really well done, high resolution photos of your murder scene. That's pretty basically what the police in Detroit do. So let's talk a little bit about some good news out of Detroit. What do we got, Nikki?
Detroit is kind of having its own small renaissance right now, per se. I guess since some of the unfavorable people moved out.
It's Hamsterdam.
Things
aren't legal there that should be, but the police, they've laid them all off, and they're scared to go to some neighborhood. So you can have your own unregulated vegetable garden there without permits and get away with it, probably.
Well, I would assume there are probably also blocks where you can buy any kind of drug you want to, but they're probably being good and kind of keeping it on the down low. But with the urban gardening, it's a huge thing. A lot of artists have moved into Detroit now, and there are also a lot of entrepreneurs that are moving in there trying to get cheap land and cheap infrastructure so that they can build their businesses. And so the urban gardening, I was told that in Detroit for an entire year, you can rent a lot for $25 and grow your garden on it. So that's pretty amazing. And I'm reading here a statistic that the nonprofit Greening of Detroit estimated in 2013 that between 1,500 and 2,000 urban gardens were being maintained within the city limits. So that's a lot of gardening, and I'm not sure where all the food is going, maybe to some outer communities and to some local farmers markets, and the restaurants probably that have opened up in downtown Detroit are probably using a lot of this produce as well. But it's also a way for the city to create jobs, sustainability. I know that there are a lot of criminals being released from jail, and they're now going to work in this field. It gives them jobs.
In this field.
I think it's pretty cool. I've been wanting to go up there and check it out for myself. At the same time, I'm like, I really would like to be armed if I enter the city.
Well, we know armed people outside of Detroit that would probably accompany you or lend you a pistol. I did not fly to Porkfest with a pistol. I borrowed one there. My joke is that I walked into Porkfest unarmed, and they said, "You can't come in here unarmed," and handed me a gun, kind of like the cheap tie they give you in a nice restaurant. But that's not actually the truth. I actually made arrangements with a nice lady there who actually lent me a pink revolver. I didn't open carry it. I don't like wearing belts, partly because I'm fat, but I didn't like wearing belts when I was skinny. I've never liked belts. They always feel kind of like wearing neckties. It kind of feels like, you know, something binding you. So, I carried it in that messenger bag I was carrying with me the whole time. And if you notice, I was really careful with that messenger bag. You never saw me set it down at a table or have it out of my sight. I always had it on me. Yep.
Yeah, you were one of the good gun owners at Porkfest.
One of the good gun owners. I was one of the good ones. So let's talk with Nick, our resident farmer here, yak farmer, about farming and what it entails. So Nick, what do you do? What do you do with yourself and your farm?
Right now I've got a small herd of yaks and a few hogs, and I run them almost completely on grass. The yaks are completely in the field, and the hogs get a little bit of slop and grain to keep them friendly and nice and happy.
Let me ask a little a kind of a hippie question here. Do you ever, like, you know, bond with your animals and become friends with them and then have trouble slaughtering them?
No, I do bond with the animals a little bit. I make sure that they know who I am and that they like me and enough so I can go up to them and, you know, touch them. The pigs are real friendly. The yaks aren't really. They still don't like me. And the 4-H animals that I take care of, they always warm up to me.
So then it's kind of like slaughtering your friend later.
I don't get that attached to animals anymore.
Do you name them?
No, if they have names, they're named by other people.
Yeah, I think that would probably help not having a trouble slaughtering them when it's time. Do you slaughter them yourself, or do you take them somewhere to be slaughtered?
I take them to another place. So sometimes I'm not even involved, but with 4-H, I just sell the animal and they slaughter their own animal.
How'd you get involved in 4-H, and how long have you been involved in it?
My cousins still are pretty big cattle ranchers, and my aunt did run a 4-H club. She's still the leader. And when I was in fourth grade, you know, my parents just said, "We've got lands. You got to be in 4-H." So I had my first 4-H lamb, and we kept it here on the farm.
What does 4-H mean? What does the name mean?
4-H, the H's are health, hands, head, and heart.
Nice.
Not in that order.
But special order?
No, well, I think there is a special order, but I don't remember. Well,
there's actually a pledge. Do you know the pledge?
Yes, I do, but I can't recite it. I can follow along with everybody else.
I pledge my heart to clearer thinking. No, I pledge my head to clearer thinking.
My heart to greater loyalty.
My hands to larger service. My health to better living for my club, my community, my country, and my world.
Yeah, that's it.
And it was the pledge was written in 1918. And my dad was actually a member of 4-H when he was a kid. It's been around forever. It's a good thing. It kind of seems like one of the few organizations that, at least my glance of it, it seems like it has not been turned into a socialist. Is there any political angle to it?
No, I wouldn't say. I think maybe some of the farmers, they promote 4-H so they can keep their industry going, but I don't think that's really political.
Yeah. Is there a nationalistic angle to it?
A little bit. We do say the Pledge of Allegiance every meeting.
Oh.
I don't, but...
Well, the Pledge of Allegiance was written by a socialist to sell flags. That's a fact.
Yep.
But, so tell me a little bit more about the kind of things you do and learn in 4-H.
4-H, our club is not very involved in the community, I would say. We kind of are a laid-back sort of thing. A lot of clubs do a lot of community service work, and we do. We run a few events through the year at the school I go to. We have an annual Easter egg hunt, and we fundraise a little bit. We go out and help the community. We buy food for a youth shelter in town here.
Nice.
Other than just raising animals, we do community service. I think we send some stuff overseas to troops in Afghanistan.
So what do you learn? What kind of life skills, like specifically, like what kind of things do you do? And in a larger sense, how does it prepare you for later life?
I would say that the main thing is working with the animal. And that's very difficult because you cannot communicate with the animal and you're trying to teach it to do what you want it to do. And that takes quite a bit of patience because it takes a long time to break its will if you're trying to pull it with a halter, and it takes a long time for it to get used to you. Or it doesn't. If you're feeding it the right amount and you do it right, they warm up pretty fast. But when you halter break them, that's not fun for them.
What is that?
So to move an animal, at least for steers and sheep, you don't put a halter on a pig. A halter is basically a leash, but it's not wrapped around their neck. It's wrapped around their nose and the back of their head. That way, when you pull it, you're not choking it. But the halter break it, animals aren't really meant to be pulled around on a halter, so you have to train them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if they're not meant to, but they're not born to it.
They don't do it naturally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I use a halter on my dog.
How do you attach it, Nikki?
It goes over his nose. It's actually called a haltee, and it goes over his nose, and then it attaches to his leash. So I'm actually leading him by the nose with his leash, and it helps him from not pulling me down the sidewalk.
That's a phrase too, being led by the nose.
Huh.
Yep. Yeah. So Nick, you do a podcast, the Anarcho-Yakitalism podcast, which is about philosophy. How did you get interested in philosophy?
I'm kind of a nerdy kid, I guess. Not in the sense that I like math, but I like talking about ideas. I got interested in politics when I was young, and when I got into the Freedom Fiends, I kind of started questioning more. I realized, wow, maybe what I believed wasn't right in the first place. Maybe I should think a little bit more about it, and I just enjoy it.
Well, you were questioning before you heard our show, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was I guess a small government libertarian from a very early age, kind of a right wing background. I never trusted the government, but I was tired of the mainstream media, so I found you guys. I knew that, like, I couldn't trust those guys. And I found that I can trust these guys.
Well, we don't want to steal from you, and we don't want to put you in a cage. So we're more trustworthy than any government, I would say. It's amazing how small government people think that only the important things should be done by government because government's incompetent. That doesn't make sense. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends, final segment.
Worms.
So we're going to talk a little bit about planning. I don't think we did the best job with it today. And like I say, you're not supposed to say on radio, you're not supposed to point out your mistakes, but we always point out our mistakes on the Freedom Fiends because we are a teaching hospital and we're trying to teach the next generation of radio personnel here. This is the Libertarian J School or Journalism School, as they call it, which is, where people go to learn to be the news bunnies and the reporters. But Nima Vedati, who was the co-host on this show previously, was a mainstream news guy. He was an anchor for an ABC and an NBC affiliate in Wyoming and in Washington State. And he says that they don't really teach you how to do reporting. They teach you how to give the government view, basically, on news. And it's not even like a conspiracy. It's not like top down. It's just kind of what the square people of any age who watch news, who still get their news from television instead of the internet or radio, you know, they want their news packaged in a way that says, there's a problem. Here's the problem. Here's an interview with someone who's affected by the problem. There's a solution. It's the government. It's the government getting more money and power. Here's someone who says they'll be positively affected by the government getting more money and power. That's pretty much every mainstream news story. So, but we want to talk a little bit about planning and how we plan. How do you plan your life, Nikki?
Sticky notes. Lots and lots of sticky notes. But I mean, working for myself, it's kind of hard because there are times when I have to be up really late to do a job or receive emails or contact people on the West Coast. So my life has kind of been all over the map for the last 5 years. Starting in September, I'm starting a new temporary job, so I will actually have a real schedule. And I can be organized when I want to be, but right now I'd say I'm not super organized.
Yeah, I think organization, self-organization is one of the most important things for people to learn, especially if they want to be self-employed. Nick, what do you do for how do you organize your life?
I have a list of things that I need to prioritize, especially for the farming. We have different things that need to be done, and I organize them on how important they are.
What priority levels are assigned?
I have urgent, high priority, urgent, low priority, non-urgent, high priority, and non-urgent, low priority.
Where do you write these down, and do you color code them or anything like that?
Don't color code them. They're just in little boxes written on a piece of paper. Eventually, we have to change pieces of paper and redraw it, which is a little bit of an issue. But
yeah, I've come up with a method that I call the Dean one page plan. You know, if I wanted to, since I write books for a living, I could probably write this into a book and make it a bestseller, but it's not the kind of book I want to write. This is just something that I like. I say free on radio and people can do it if they want. Basically, I have a template on my desktop. It's three columns. It's a Word document. And it says at the top, going left to right, there's three columns. And it's do, call, and buy. And do is things I have to do. And call is not just call. It's contact. It's call. It's email. It's call. It's visit. You know, it's people I have to discuss something with. And buy is things I need to get. So do, call, and buy pretty much organizes everything. That pretty much everything I need to do fits in one of those three categories. And I print this out. It has the headers at the top. It has columns. Do, call, and buy. And then I write things down on it during the day, you know, and I keep one of these for about 2 or 3 days and cross things out as I do them. And then when it gets too messy looking, I print out another one and recycle the old one. And in conjunction with that, I have a calendar. I do everything on a computer. I live on the computer, but there's two things I do on paper. One is the do, call, buy list, and the other is a calendar. I highly recommend, people want to organize their life, get a calendar, something without pictures, that has just a big desktop blotter type calendar with about 2 square inches, 2 inches by 2 inches, 4 square inches for each day. And I write stuff down. I write it months ahead of time. I write things I have to do, renew licenses, renew things, you know, go on trips, when my wife's off work, things like that. And I cross out a day when it's done. And it really helps me organize things. It's the Dean, nice. The Dean one-page plan. So I recommend anybody who's having organizational problems, try those two things. The do, call, buy list and the big blotter-sized calendar on the wall. I put it on the wall. Okay. All right. It's been a good Fiends, guys. Thanks, Nikki.
Worms.
Thanks, Nick.
No problem.
Yeah, worms.
Yep. We'll be back tonight. Derek J. and Lusander Fiend will be doing the Fiends tonight in 10 hours. Worms.
Meow.